Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Cinema Theology, the place where we like to discuss movies through the lens of a theological perspective. That's the name, Cinema Theology. You know this if you've heard us before. I am your co-host, Josias Flores, here with my other co-host,
Hadid Cortez. Glad to be back.
Glad to have you, Hadid, as I like to call you Dido. And well, let's talk about the movie we have for today. Dido, can you tell us a little bit about the movie that we're covering and also give us a quick synopsis? And we'll just dive right into it.
Sure. So today we are talking about The Batman. There are many Batman films, but the one we're talking about today is the 2022 release directed by Matt Reeves, who I just want to shout out is rapidly becoming one of my favorite directors. He directed this, and he also directed two of the Planet of the Apes movies, which I think are very underrated. Anyway, so the film is about Batman, go figure, trying to catch the Riddler, who is on a series of... Well, he is embarking to kill a bunch of powerful people in Gotham City, while at the same time exposing several of the corrupt cases and corrupt officials of the city. Throughout the film, we meet Wonder Woman, we meet Commissioner Gordon, and it is really quite an enthralling and very intense film. I think this may be one of the darkest comic book movies, certainly the darkest Batman movie, and possibly one of the most disturbing. But I think this film has several themes that we do not find in a lot of superhero movies. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. Also, I think you said Wonder Woman and you meant Catwoman.
Sorry,
just want to clarify
Catwoman.
That. That's okay. Just in case. This is not a Justice League movie. It's a Batman movie. There's no Wonder Woman. It is Catwoman. I would agree. And actually was surprised. I just dropped something. But I actually was surprised that that this is a PG-13 rating. I mean, I guess technically it's PG-13, but I, like you said, it's a kind of a disturbing one. And of course, we will be spoiling the movie if you haven't seen it. So this is your spoiler alert. Very interesting Batman film. Very well done with the cinema. Man, it's a theme with our cinematography recently. We're just choosing movies that just beautifully shot. But Dido, you're a musician. And I don't know if you knew that, listener. Dido is a great musician. We'll talk about that maybe some other time. But what did you think about the music in this film?
So I am a big fan of Michael Giacchino, or Giacchino. I don't know how you pronounce it. He has made some of the best scores all around, going all the way back to Ratatouille and up. And lately, he's been more into live action films. And this, I think this is one of his best. I think he was snubbed for best original score the year that those Oscars came out. And I think the theme is very memorable. It is also very atmospheric. Sometimes it even has hints of like horror movie music. And it really adds so much atmosphere to the film. And I think that's something that I really admire about this one, the atmosphere. You mentioned the cinematography. The city, the what you're looking at is often very ugly, but Matt Reeves and Greg Fraser, who is the cinematographer, find a way to make it seem somehow beautiful. And I think that's a testament to how well this movie is constructed and directed. I don't think is the best comic book movie out there, but it's certainly up there.
I'm curious, what do you think might be the best comic book movie? Putting you on the spot. We did not talk about this.
Still, my favorite might still be the original Batman. The Dark Knight, directed by Christopher Nolan, but up there competing with it is also Logan and the recent Spider-Verse movies.
Okay. I will say, you know, going into this Batman movie, I was nervous because I feel like any time now that we have a Batman movie come out or a movie with Batman in it, but particularly one that focuses on Batman, they're kind of cast in the shadow of the Christopher Nolan, Heath Ledger, Dark Knight. I mean, it's a high bar. And I, you know, with the Batman, I was pretty pleased. I thought the villain was well done without having to, you know, rival the Joker from the Dark Knight. And I might agree with you. I still think that movie may be better, but for me at least, not by much. I mean, this movie was pretty good.
Not by much, yeah. And it's such a different experience. The Dark Knight was more of a very intense, high action crime thriller. This is more of a slow kind of neo-noir mystery thriller. So it has a completely different vibe. So yeah,
I love how it brings out Batman as a detective more. That's pretty interesting. But okay, that's enough fanboying about the different aspects of the movie. Let's talk about the theology that kind of comes out of the movie. Not that the movie's trying to portray theology, but that there are themes that connect and intersect with theological ideas. What are some of those ideas for you, Dido, that stood out that you think are kind of major themes, so to speak, in the movie?
Well, let me start with this one. I think one of the most interesting aspects of this movie is how differently Bruce Wayne is portrayed. And I'm not talking about Batman, I'm talking about Bruce Wayne. So usually Bruce Wayne is portrayed as charming, rich, suave, a very social character. And he does this usually to keep up appearances so that no one will suspect him of being the Batman. But this film takes a completely different approach. Bruce Wayne is completely apathetic to his, shall we say, real life persona. He's reclusive. At some point, Alfred has to force him to come to board meetings by having the board come to his like gothic tower. He doesn't even use his wealth to do any philanthropy. He doesn't provide any tangible help to those in need in the city. As Bruce Wayne, he dedicates all of his financial, his mental, and emotional faculties to being the Batman and exacting vengeance on criminals. And I think it's interesting to analyze this in the larger persona of Batman, because we know that his origin story is that his parents were killed in front of him by a criminal when he was a kid. And he does what he does as Batman, as kind of exacting vengeance on criminals and making sure that no child, no person has to go through what he went through as a kid. So in a certain sense, it's like he's trying to honor his parents by becoming the Batman and focusing all his time and resources on that. But I think this film raises an important question about what is the family legacy here? There are a few things that the film reveals about his parents, especially his father, who we know was a surgeon. He was a doctor who, Batman says, he lived by the Hippocratic Oath. In one of the old newsreels that is shown in the film, there is a video of Thomas Wayne, his father, saying that giving back to the community is the Wayne family legacy. And even though at certain points in the film it is revealed that his father was still kind of corrupt, he was still a man who was interested in helping those in need. He was compassionate and giving, and this is why he set up the trust fund for the city, for the economic projects that he intended to be spread out to those in need. But unfortunately, after his death, it is said that all these criminals and the mobsters and the politicians go after and use it to further their own corruption, to do money laundering and stuff like that. But with all that said, I don't think what Bruce Wayne does really reflects the character of his father. And I think this raises an interesting question about how we as children live up to our father or our parents' legacy. And as Christians, we need to grapple with the following question: how do we live up to God, who is our father? Well, I think something that Paul says in Ephesians 5, verses 1 through 2 may help us answer this question, where Paul says, "Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma." What this verse tells us is that as children of God, we are expected to imitate God because we are his children. And I think this paints a picture as to what it means to really honor your parents, or, you know, in this case, honor God, to honor the things that they stood for and imitate best aspects of those people in your own life. And if we hold Bruce Wayne to this standard. I don't think he's, at the beginning at least, he's really living up to his father's legacy. He thinks it's merely vengeance, but it needs to go a little bit further than that. And I think he kind of realizes it by the end, but I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. What do you think of what we just discussed?
Yeah, a very interesting point. And, you know, there's a part in the movie as different things come out about his father, right? And the Riddler has kind of a perspective on his dad and who he was. I think is that Falcone has a perspective on his dad. And he says, you know, he wasn't a Boy Scout. And then Alfred gives him a perspective on his dad. But there's definitely a lot of guilt as Bruce Wayne begins to learn about what his father's legacy may have been, which part of it apparently seems to have been potentially getting a man killed, although we find out later that he never intended for that man to be killed. And then, you know, setting up a fund that was used for corruption, the Renewal Fund. Bruce Wayne, Batman, both of them together, right? They're one person, are struggling with this idea of his father being potentially a corrupt person. It's not who he had in mind. And then it makes him question, I guess, who he is, and maybe fills him with guilt. And so I think it's an interesting thing that's very applicable to us in the sense that oftentimes we look at our past, we look at our parents, we look at our families, and we may see alcoholics, we may see addicts, we may see people who like abuse spouses or whatever the case may be. And the question is, can we leave the shadow of our parent and their choices, or are we bound to kind of generational curses that we cannot break? It's an interesting thing. And how does God see us in light of what our parents have done? You know? Mm-hmm. So it makes me think of Ezekiel 18, verse 20, that tells us, the soul who sins shall die, the son shall not suffer for the iniquity of the father. That's a theme in the movie, the sins of the father, right, shall be visited upon the son. But here in Ezekiel, we see the son shall not suffer for the iniquity of the father, nor the father suffer for the iniquity of the son. The righteous of the righteous shall be upon himself, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon himself. There's this idea of personal responsibility that God holds on each person. Mm-hmm. And so despite or regardless of what our parents, our grandparents, our family members may have done, we have an opportunity to change the narrative at some level, and God honors that. And actually, he's the one who can facilitate that in our cases.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing. Also, I thought about Jesus as a young man in Luke chapter 2. There's a story of Jesus not being found on the way back from Jerusalem. His mom and dad, his earthly father and mother, you know, Mary and Joseph, they can't find him. They search for him for days. They go back to the temple. They finally find him there, sitting at the feet of the laws and the lawyers and the teachers. And when they question, hey, why did you do this to us? Basically, he says in verse 49, why did you seek me? Did you not know that I must be about my father's business? So Jesus, from an early age, understood his true father is God, right? Is his father in heaven. And he extends that invitation and opportunity to us. And I mean, the Lord's Prayer is all about this, right? That's how it starts. Our Father, which art in heaven. So it's this idea that regardless of what our earthly fathers may have been or not been, maybe they were absent, maybe they left us, we still have a true father in God who can override the curses and the bad cycles that that our own families of origin may have passed on. And I find that's beautiful. And I think the movie kind of speaks to this idea of what we do with our father's legacy. And oh, wait, we can create a new legacy. And that's what will define us.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. While we're on the subject of breaking cycles, I want to talk right now about the cycle of violence.
A lot of violence in this movie.
Yeah, so I think you mentioned it before we started recording, but the first monologue that Batman gives at the introduction, he says that he wants to effect change, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He wants to change Gotham because it is corrupt, it is dangerous, it is full of criminals, and he wants to do something about that. Throughout the film, we see some of the people that Batman has kind of inspired. So first we have the Riddler. Throughout the whole film, Riddler is kind of in the dark. We don't know who he is. And towards the third act, we find out who he is. And surprisingly, he thinks that he's in cahoots with Batman. He thinks that Batman is on his side and that they stand for the same things. Which, of course, he is very mistaken. Another person that we find is kind of inspired by Batman or thinks that he's on their side is Catwoman. Catwoman tries to exact vengeance on a personal level by going after her real father, Falcone, by killing the man who killed her friend. And she thinks that Batman is completely okay with this, and she even tells him, let's do this, we are in this together. And of course, Batman is also, hey, that's not what I stand for. And I don't think he really realizes what he's doing, what he's doing is accomplishing until towards the end, Commissioner Gordon has this man tied down and he asks him, who are you? And this man, of course, he's terrorizing the political hearing, the vote.
I think it was a rally for the mayor-elect. I think Villarreal had been elected and there was a rally to kind of talk mm-hmm. about her plans.
Yeah, so this man has been was shooting to the crowd trying to assassinate the Villarreal and terrorize and spread fear throughout. And Commissioner Gordon asks him, who are you? And this man tells him, I am vengeance. And this calls back to the first scene we have with Batman, where Batman comes to a group of thugs who are beating on an innocent man. And they ask him, what are you supposed to be? And Batman says, I'm vengeance. But at the moment here at the end, when this thug, this terrorist, tells them, I am vengeance, I think he realizes, this is my fault. These people are on some level, this is my fault. I have perpetuated the cycle of violence, and this is what it's breeding. And I think that hits so hard because we live in a world where there is so much violence, especially here, you know, in the U.S. We have so many school shootings, we have so much gun violence, and there's suddenly violence elsewhere in the world, and we're often at odds to see what we can do about it. And the question is, does scripture provide us a solution? Any way that we can fight and we can break that cycle of violence? And I want to read something here that is written Romans 12, 21. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. In other words, if we want to deal with violence, we cannot do it by instigating even more violence. That just continues the cycle. If we want to break the cycle of evil, the cycle of violence, we must battle it with the opposite. We must battle it with compassion and mercy and love. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think you're right on. I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, battle violence with violence. Of course not. To your point about Romans, it's interesting because verse 19 says, beloved, never avenge yourselves, but mm-hmm. leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. The question of how do we react to the violence and the injustice in our world, the biblical answer and idea is not take it into your own hands, like a vigilante, mm-hmm. for example, or like a serial killer who thinks he's doing good, but leave it to the Lord. Yes, I think there is a place for justice, you mm-hmm. know? There is a place for retribution for evils done, but it is not the place for an individual to take that into themselves unless that individual is God himself, who is the ultimate fair person, the creator, the one who has the right to take away life because he gives it, not mm-hmm. for another human being. And then as you said later, just a few verses later, overcome evil with good. That's what we're called to be, overcoming evil with good. That is our first answer. You know, it's interesting because you talked about the opening monologue for the movie. And in that monologue, the Batman says, fear is a tool. Mm-hmm. But then he also says, I wish I could say I'm making a difference, but I don't know. Maybe it's beyond saving, but I have to try, push myself. So it's like, you know, we find out in the movie that he's been doing this for 2 years. He's been trying to do it this way, ask vengeance, using fear. And like you just pointed out, at towards the end of the movie, he realizes his legacy after those 2 years, his effect is other people are now thinking that they can take matters into their own hands and use violence to bring justice about. But not only violence, but bring death, right? Which is something, a line he doesn't cross, but they're happily crossing because they think that's the right thing to do. That's the right way to exact vengeance. And I, towards the end, at another monologue, you have Batman saying, vengeance won't change the past. I have to become more. And then he talks about bringing hope. And we see how in the end of the movie, even visually, Batman is bringing hope. I mean, no one is saying, okay, you're bringing hope now. But him carrying that flare through the water and leading people out of that terrible situation that has happened to their city.
How good was that shot, though?
Oh, my goodness. Like, it's good enough to be a poster. I mean, it's a... or.
Yeah.
Anyway, I could gush about that, but it was an incredible shot. Props to whoever, you know, had their picture board and envisioned that in their mind for the first time, because they did a great job. But again, it's just incredible visual storytelling about how hope is the thing that breaks through the darkness in the end. And that's what Batman, now how he's going to move forward. It's also interesting because, you know, he's... this idea of using fear is challenged throughout the movie with the other characters, as you brought out. Another character that challenges this is Falcone, because he talks about, when he's talking about how he was supposed to take care of the guy who was going to bury his mother, right? Batman's mother. He says that his father, Thomas Wayne, told Falcone, I want you to put the fear of God in this guy. And so he says, I tried, and when fear doesn't work, like the idea was I killed him, right? So it's like, even there, his father, Thomas, thought about using fear to work through his problems, and that didn't work. It led to death, and then he realized that's not what needed to happen. And Batman is going through the same journey. You know, he's using fear to try to change the city for the better, and when it's up happening, it brings death by these other individuals that are inspired by it. And so he realizes we have to change the script. We have to change the narrative. We have to use hope instead of fear, instead of vengeance. It's a powerful journey, the hero's journey through this movie, speaking to the idea of hope. And it reminds me of 1 John 4:18, which is a very common verse, a very powerful verse though. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, for fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not been perfected in love. The biblical idea for facing the evil in this world is not bring about your own vengeance, try to just instill fear in people so that they fall in line, but rather learn how to love God and love your neighbor to a point where your reaction is good instead of evil. You're not corrupted by the evil, and you can be a beacon of hope.
As I was watching, I was thinking to myself, the big change that happens in Batman is that he realizes that just attacking the people, the corrupt and the evil people, is not enough. He also needs to help those who are in need. He needs to instill hope, as you said. And as I was watching this, and as we're talking, my mind keeps going to the place where how many people in Christianity live out their faith just by attacking what is quote unquote evil without doing any good.
Wow.
I think as Christians, we need to come to a similar realization that simply calling out what is wrong, calling out what is evil is not enough. We need to marry that with a sincere love for humanity, and we need to marry that with spreading hope for the people that are in need.
Yeah. You know, and I think the movie goes into kind of more detail about this idea that you're sharing, because there's this character that I think is fascinating. Doesn't have any lines in the movie, but it's the mayor's son, who on a Halloween, 20 years after, Bruce Wayne loses his parents. He loses his father as well through a terrible crime, and he's the one who finds him dead. And it seems throughout the movie that Batman and this boy, they seem to have a connection, unspoken connection, just by like eye contact, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the movie, when Batman is trying to help people out of the wreck of the garden and the flood and everything that's happening, he stretches out his hand to the mayor. And you mentioned this earlier before we recorded. The mayor doesn't take it. No one else takes it. The first person to take his hand to help or to come out of that situation is this dead mayor's son, the boy who has gone through a very similar experience as Bruce Wayne. And it's like Batman at that point realizes, I need to help people that have gone through what I've gone through, right? To come mm-hmm. out of their situation. I can help others to survive the suffering and trauma they've endured that kind of are connected to my own story. So instead of using my trauma to bring about fear, let me use my trauma to help others in the same situation so that they don't have to walk the same path. But I know you had another kind of view on that scene in particular. You want to speak to kind of what you saw there.
You kind of mentioned it, that Batman in a way sees himself in this child. And I love that gets across simply by looks, you know, because yeah. Batman just stares at him in that first scene. And then when they're at the funeral, Bruce Wayne also just looks at him and he has compassion for him. And in the end, he helps him out of the wreckage. And for me, that is kind of therapeutic, because in a sense, it's like he's reaching out to his inner child.
Wow, yeah.
He's reaching out to himself back when his parents were lost, and providing for this child the hope and the assurance that he needed when he was a child. Mm. And I think that also feeds into breaking the cycle of yes. violence and the cycle of evil.
Yeah, that's good. I know you mentioned something about the water in that end scene, in those ending scenes, rather. What did you make of that?
So it comes right after that scene where the thug tells them all, I'm vengeance. And he kind of like stares in realization of what is happening. And then he sees that the entire arena is becoming flooded and wreckage is falling on people. And what he does is that he dives into the water and he comes out. And I want to talk about what this means in larger filmmaking language, because usually when a character goes into water and comes out into a new perspective, because Batman does have a change in perspective here. He is changing his approach to fighting evil, as we have mentioned. And this is symbolized through a type of baptism where he goes into the water. He even, I don't remember exactly, but he falls in kind of like a Christ-like position, you know, with his mm-hmm. arms extended.
Mm-hmm. And he kind of, he's like sacrificing himself because he cuts an electrical wire and it seems like he's shocked.
Yeah.
And for a second, you think, did he die? Is he dead? Because he's, you know, he's going through electricity in the water. Anyway, just wanted to talk more about that scene, but continue. I interrupted your thought there.
So he falls into the water and he comes out, and that's when he lights up the torch and he leads the people out of the wreckage. And I think that's just a way that the filmmakers communicate that there is a big change in perspective by having type of a symbolic baptism. I think that's just a cool little detail there.
It is cool. And oh man, I'm not saying that the filmmakers, the storytellers, were thinking about these things when they wrote this scene. I'm not sure that they were thinking about baptism, although I think there's a strong chance. But I also, it makes me think of John 3:19, not 16, the very famous verse for 19. The Bible says, and this is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and people love the darkness rather than the light because their works were evil. But this is talking about this idea of light throughout the book of John. It's talking about Jesus and Jesus mm-hmm. coming into the world. And this scene reminds me of this idea in the book of John, because Batman goes down into the depths, comes out and brings light to help people come out of that darkness. Mm. And listen, in our lives, in our reality, it's not a Batman that comes and does that. It's Jesus mm-hmm. himself. Jesus is the one who ultimately is the light of the world, is the one who brings us out of our darkness, of our shame, of the guilt, of the suffering. And some people love the darkness rather than the light, and they decide to stay in darkness. But those that choose to follow Jesus end up and find themselves in the light. And I think that's a beautiful reality. There was one who actually did come into the depths of the world, did face death, yes, and does bring light. And that's not Batman. That's not a superhero. It's just Jesus himself.
I find it really fascinating that this film, as I said, it's probably one of the darkest and most disturbing superhero films, comic book films. But its message is so hopeful and kind of unique in when we talk about superhero movies, because there are so many of them, and I have not seen this exemplified so well in a comic book movie.
I agree. It's, you know, there's a phrase, Dido, that you used to tell me all the time when we would watch movies together in person, and especially movies that I was like, oh man, that was like a sad movie, or I didn't really like this or that. And you would end, yeah, but it's uplifting. It's an uplifting. Yeah. It's an uplifting movie. And to be honest, you obviously know this because we were in person, but I'm sharing this for the audience. There was times that I thought that was kind of funny and would, you know, make light of that. Yeah, okay, it's uplifting, I'm sure. So any movie that was kind of like super sad ending, I was just, well, it's uplifting, just to mess with you. But genuinely, this movie did feel uplifting. It's, again, it's heavy, but the ending, it ends with hope. And again, the world and our lives, there will be suffering. It's gonna be messy. It's not gonna be pretty. It's not like, it's not a Hollywood movie where everything is beautiful and everything works out in the end, and you know, people leave these perfect lives. No, it's ugly, and it's, you know, it's a drudge sometimes. But in the end, we can also experience hope, and for that reason, I relate to this movie quite a bit, even if it is pretty disturbing at times.
Yeah, for me, it's ultimately what feeling does the film leave you with? Even though there is so much violence and disturbing things in this movie, the last thing you're left with is the hope that things will get better.
One of my last thoughts here, and it's a theme that is present, not as overtly as some others that we talked about, but one that stood out to me. And it's this idea, and it's in most superhero movies, or many superhero movies, the masks that we wear. Mm-hmm. Who are we really? Are we the person with the mask, or are we the person without the mask? Who are we really? Can we separate the two? I don't have like any biblical verse that comes to my mind with this, but I do have a quote from Roger Hernandez, actually. He said one time, I heard him in a seminar, he said, God cannot bless the person that you pretend to be. And I thought that was a pretty powerful idea. Mm-hmm. And one that when I, you know, watch superhero movies, and definitely the Batman, they talk about, like, you know, who are you behind that mask? Or someone tells the Batman at one point, this is the real you, talking about him being the Batman, not, you know, the other person. And I think the movie does kind of portray that, right? Like the person that Bruce Wayne has decided to really invest in and become is the Batman, not Bruce Wayne. Mm-hmm. And I think in Christianity, we find a lot of this, where it's like we pretend to be the person with the mask rather than the broken person underneath. And we need to come to terms with all parts of ourselves so that God can bless us even more so than he is already. So what mask do you wear? Why do you wear it? Is it driven by shame? Is it driven by fear? Is it driven by a need to please other people? Whatever it may be, just consider why it is that you, if you think you wear a mask, why you wear it, and allow God to bless you in the vulnerability of not having something to hide behind. Anyway, a thought that came to my mind there.
Yeah, I think if we go deeper into that, we would turn this into an episode of Cinema Therapy.
That's good. Maybe we should start a podcast. Nah, we're not qualified to do cinema therapy. That's okay. So if someone's listening out there and you are qualified, maybe think about doing a cinema therapy podcast. And I will listen to it and I would enjoy it. And both of us would probably you know, be glad to be a guest on your podcast, but we're not qualified to do that.
I actually think there is a duo that does sit like does what we do with but with like psychology and therapy. So I think it is called cinema therapy.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so you can't call it cinema therapy anymore. Okay. You should reach out to them. Interesting. Huh. I'm gonna look them up.
All right.
Things you learn.
Definitely. Okay, so I think this is a good place to leave off. So to all our listeners, please let us know what you think. If you have any thoughts, please share them with us. We are available on Facebook, Instagram. We even have a TikTok now. But always, we encourage you to reach out to us by email at cinematheology@gmail.com. Anything to add, Josias?
No, we love your ideas. They fuel us. This is why we do this. We want to have conversations with each other, but also with you. So feel free to reach out. We don't consider any idea a bad idea, just something to ponder about and move forward with. So hope to hear from you.
Yes, definitely.